Welcome to Up in the Sky, Aviation and Travel Podcast. Stay tuned for up-to-date aviation and travel news, followed by this week's topic of discussion. Now here's your host, Ebony J.
Everyone, and welcome back to episode 17 of Up in the Sky Aviation and Travel Podcast. Now, we took a week off last week, as after 16 weeks of doing this every single week, Wednesday or Thursday, depending on how I felt or how busy I was, I thought it was time to sort of relax and also refresh my mind and maybe come up with some new ideas of how to promote and how to better the podcast for you. And this goes out to all you guys. If you do have any ideas on how I can improve on the podcast or promotions, please let me know on my Instagram page. I would really love to hear your ideas, but I'm hoping to look into new ideas on how to promote this more to a more audience. And also maybe look into doing some live podcasts in the Spotify Green Room app they've just developed. And I haven't really researched into this yet, but I know it's you can do live podcasts, you can interview people. So that'll be interesting to see how what I can do with that. So over the next few weeks, I'll be looking into that, researching, and we'll see what happens. But before I go on, let's just jump into the most recent aviation and travel news from the past 2 weeks. So first up in the news this week, and it hasn't really been a good few weeks for British Airways. So firstly, on the 18th of June, which was not last Friday, the Friday before, I think, a British Airways Boeing 787 actually collapsed at the stand that they were parked at within London Heathrow Airport. So whilst the aircraft was parked at the stand, the nose gear seemed to have collapsed and sort of nosedived into the ground. So a British Airways spokesperson said a freighter aircraft has been damaged while stationary on the stand, and as a freighter only aircraft, there were no passengers on board, luckily. And they also added that safety is always the highest priority and they are investigating the matter further. And the incident didn't actually affect any flights going in and out of Heathrow, despite initial reports of delays. And yeah, they just said there's been no delays with any other planes for this nose gear collapse. It's very confusing how that happens, but you never know with aircrafts. But it's just very lucky that that was a freighter aircraft, and also that there was no passengers on board. Because can you imagine, like, going onto the plane and setting off for like your holiday or going on a business trip, and the nose just collapsed? Like, that could have caused quite a lot of injuries, and for the crew as well. So I'm not sure if the crew were on board, but if there was passengers, there could have been a load of injuries, and it would have been a lot more complicated than it is. So it is very lucky that it was a freighter plane and it caused no delays. So the aircraft is going into the hangar, getting all the works done on it at the moment, and hopefully we'll see the 787 aircraft back out in the air quite soon. Yeah. So in other news with British Airways this week, as I said, they weren't having the best 2 weeks. And this was most recently on Sunday. British Airways had more trouble. And this was when the carrier's website could not be accessed. And this led to flights being delayed as staff could not access key information. So thankfully, the systems were put back online later at night and there were no major issues since. But this led to multiple British Airways systems being down for several hours. So basically, you've got all the travel, all the staff system, all the booking system, everything just went down, all the check-ins at the airport. So the services impacted included BA.com, the online customer support, and some elements of the flight operations, which were down in the early evening, just after about 6 p.m. And this meant that people couldn't book flights, so they lost quite a bit of money there. They couldn't amend flights or cancel flights during this period. However, according to Head for Points, the last two flights for the day to Abuja and Newcastle were both delayed due to software issues. So Twitter recommended, because Twitter is the way to go if you want to get the most information. The BA account on Twitter recommended that travellers should check in directly at the airport for flights departing on that evening. And not too many passengers were impacted by the sudden issues, which was quite lucky. So although some software was down, they could still check in some passengers and no flights were delayed. And luckily by 10 o'clock, so about 4 hours later, the issue seemed to be resolved and BA.com was functioning again. So people could start booking and amending flights. And the BA support team did put on Twitter and they confirmed that the technical issues were solved, hopefully solved. And they did apologise for any disruptions. It's crazy to think that one IT malfunction and the whole airline just goes down. Like, I remember, I probably said this before, we went to Santorini in Greece for my uncle's wedding back in 2017 on that Maybank holiday. So we were all coming back on the Saturday, so half of us were... I'm not really sure why we didn't all just get the same flight back to London Heathrow, but it's luckily... we didn't. So five of them, including the bride and groom, went back with British Airways to London Heathrow, while the rest of us went to, we flew to London Gatwick with EasyJet, lovely EasyJet. And the people that were on the British Airways flight, they actually got stranded out to the following Tuesday due to a software malfunction and all the IT systems were down. And they didn't enjoy it at all. They just wanted to go home. They were being put into hotels and everything. It was mad. So I was quite lucky and glad that I wasn't one of them on the British Airways flight, but I did feel bad for them. They were just wanted to go home. But yeah, so it's just crazy to think this has happened with BA before. Luckily it was only for a short time, for 4 hours, and not many flights were disrupted, but it could have been a lot worse, like the time in 2017. Yeah. So over to Bristol Airport now, and they have announced this week that it will become carbon neutral later this year and is hopefully wanting to hit targets that it originally expected to reach by 2025, so reaching these targets really early. So setting it up, this will be setting the airport up to gain the title of the UK's first net zero airport by 2030. So bosses have said the three key commitments to be a net zero airfield is with net zero buildings and operating a net zero fleet. There's a lot of net zeros here of vehicles. So this is not just the aircraft, this is all the vehicles going around the runway and everything. And from this, it would be able to take a leadership position within the industry and hit the deadline 20 years ahead of the government's intended date. How crazy is that? So airport CEO David Lees has stated that the aviation industry is taking its responsibilities seriously in addressing climate change challenges, working together to create the solutions now and also in the future. But the airport's claims were actually shot down by the Bristol's Green Party. So they described these sort of announcement as utter nonsense and a cynical form of greenwashing. And in a statement, the councillors of the Green Party said that the airport's net zero claims do not extend to the flights or car parking. These are the two main areas of businesses enabling planes to take off and land and operating a large and expensive car park. So promoting itself as a net zero airport is kind of misleading. So Bristol Green Councillor Carla Denyer also added, of course any work to improve the airport's climate and targets are welcome, but to brand yourself as a net zero airport without including flights, car parking or journeys to and from the airport, like they said before, is highly misleading. So I'm not sure what to think. So Carla also added that it's not only the flights they seem to want to pretend aren't happening, but also car parking operations, like we said before. And she added that an estimated 87% of passengers arrive at the airport by car, and the airport really profits massively from this because so many people park in their car parks, which is why they are so keen to concentrate over greenfields to grow sort of... It's quite confusing. I think what Carla's trying to get at is that they're trying to say that they're like the biggest like environmentally friendly airport and they've reached their targets ahead of time, and they're sort of using this saying, oh, they've not got any carbon neutral, like they've got carbon neutral vehicles within the airport, but they're trying to cover up the fact that passengers have to use cars to get to and from the airport. There's taxis all around, there's car parks, people coming to and from, as people don't take, like, quite a few people take trains and coaches. So they're sort of covering up that fact. And like Carla says, I do agree that it is very misleading. But then to achieve all these net zero goals that they have in mind, and to achieve this so early before other airports and also before the government's intended date, is quite good. But I'm not sure what to think, because the Green Party do have a point about the parking and everything. So let me know what you think. Do you think they should claim that they are a big net zero airport and they've achieved their targets? Or do you think they are, like Carla did say, covering up the fact that all these passengers are causing pollution due to car parking, travelling to and from the airport? So let me know what you think on my Instagram page. Now, heading over to America now, and to LAX Airport within Los Angeles. And on Friday, a man jumped from a moving plane at LAX after attempting to access the jet's cockpit. So the man, who was not identified, actually opened a plane door and fled via the emergency slide. So after this had happened, the man was detained on the taxiway and taken to hospital with unspecified injuries. And this occurred about 7:10 local time. So this is back in the UK, about 10 past 2 in the morning. And this was aboard a United Express flight that was operated by SkyWest Airlines going to Salt Lake City. So flight crews did report seeing the passenger getting up from the seat as the plane taxied towards the runway. They said he had pounded on the cockpit door before exiting the plane through the emergency door. And this plane was a Embraer 175 regional jet, and after this incident, it later had to return to its gate. So earlier this month, the FAA actually said it had investigated the highest number of potential breaches of law since records began in 1995, with these relations mainly being of those that wear a mask. But this is a whole different story. Like, this is a whole different matter. I'm not sure. You just never know what's going on in a person's mind. Maybe they have some mental health issues. Maybe you just never know, do you? But it must be so scary for the passengers and also the crew, because they maybe never have experienced a passenger like that trying to get into the cockpit. Your mind just goes... Like, if I was on one of those planes and I saw a man trying to get into the cockpit, your mind just goes to all different places thinking, oh no, we get it. Like, is this going to be like a terrorist attack, or are we being hijacked? What's going on? And like I said, the crew probably never dealt with that before, so their heads are probably going everywhere. It must have been a really scary moment, yeah. But it's good that he was detained, and it wasn't while they were up in the air. It was good that they were actually at LAX airport and ready to depart. So it is quite glad that they were not up in the air. Now, finally, and some really positive news this week from the UK, which really makes you be happy to be involved in such an industry. I know I don't work within the aviation industry at the moment, but it's lucky, like, to be involved. I know I'm not involved by working, but to see such an amazing industry. So the travel industry and also the aviation industry held a day of demonstration in major cities around the UK to protest against the lack of government support for the sector. So the Travel Day of Action, which was last week, saw about 800 industry professionals come together in London, plus there were several groups within Belfast and Edinburgh, to sort of pressure the government to support the industry, which, as we all know from previous talks and previous episodes, they haven't really done much for the travel and aviation industry within the last 15 months. So Mark Tanzer, the chief executive of ABTA, said that they were here for the first travel day of action to make the case to MPs and minister as to how to keep the crisis and how to keep the crisis, how to deepen the crisis, how deep the crisis is, and how urgently they do need governments to act operationally to get travel ready again, in terms of using the traffic light system within the countries, and also recognise that vaccinated passengers are different, but also help them financially. And he also adds that 195,000 travel jobs have been lost within the industry or at risk of being lost as a result of the COVID pandemic. So as well as London, like I said, more than 250 people from the Scottish Passenger Agents Association were also protesting outside the Scottish Parliament, and another 100 had assembled in Belfast whilst a virtual meeting was taking place for all campaigners within Wales. So at Bristol Airport, we're talking about Bristol Airport again, pilots joined cabin crew, travel agents and airport operations on the tarmac to vent their frustration at the government's travel restrictions. So Brian Shotton, Acting General Secretary of British Airlines Pilot Association, told ITV News that we can't have this constant chopping and changing, different opinions being expressed by different ministers. One minute you get optimism, then the next you get pessimism. So you can't really run a £53 billion industry. This just makes me very, like I said, it makes you very happy that people are standing up for their industry, as so many lives are being changed by COVID, but especially within the travel and aviation industry, as people weren't allowed to travel and weren't allowed to fly, and it's just lost so many jobs, and there's risk of even more being cut. There's risks of airlines and aviation and travel business just going under. So for them to stand up and sort of say to the government, we do need help. We need financial help. We also need more recognition and more changes, not more changes made, but they're saying that too many changes are being made that they just can't keep up with. And we need sort of a simplified version of this traffic light system, and it can't keep changing all the time. And also they need to recognise that they need to recognise that most of the population have been vaccinated twice, so they think that with them being vaccinated twice, they can actually go out and travel, and they need to make sure that these people that are vaccinated can go away and bring profit for the airlines and also the travel industry. I'm going on a bit here, but I think you get my gist. It's really good that they are standing up for their rights, and hopefully within the next coming weeks the government may act on it and financially help all these businesses, and also maybe make some positive changes, making a better traffic light system that won't change at last minute, and also the chance that those that have been vaccinated can travel, as it is quite safe to do so now, even though cases are rising. But we'll see what happens with that. So yeah, let me know what you think. Do you think they should have done this travel day of action, or do you think they maybe should have not? I think it was a very good idea. They need to stand up for themselves within the government. But let me know what you think. So that concludes the news for this week. And now on to our topic of discussion, which is all about Helios Flight 522. So now we go on to our topic of discussion, and this is going to be about Helios Flight 522. Now, for those that don't know Helios, this was an airline based in... Now, I got this wrong the other week when I was at the end of the episode, when I was saying, are we going to do Helios Flight 522? It's a Greek airline. Turns out it's not a Greek airline. I was totally wrong. I don't know why I thought it was a Greek airline. Maybe because the accident did happen in Greece. Maybe that was the reason why. And it turns out it is an airline from Cyprus. So it's a low-cost carrier that went to European and African destinations. And it was founded in 1998, but sadly ceased only 8 years later in 2006 due to financial difficulties and also from the accident. So we'll go back a year before they did cease, to Sunday the 14th of August 2005. So within the summer, loads of people going on holiday. And this was on a Boeing 737 aircraft that was leased to Helios Airways a year earlier. And this aircraft departed Larnaca Airport in Cyprus, heading for Athens within Greece. So the captain of the flight was Hans-Jürgen Merton, a 58-year-old contract pilot, and he was hired for Helios for their holiday flights, and he had been flying for 35 years and had incurred about nearly 17,000 flight hours, and this included around 5,500 hours on the Boeing 737. Then we had the first officer, which was Pampus Charan Lambus, if I got that right, a 51-year-old Cyprus nationality pilot who had flown exclusively for Helios over the past 5 years, with about 7,500 flight hours, with near enough 4,000 of them on the Boeing 747. And also on the flight were four cabin crew and 115 passengers on board, making the total 121 lives on board, and this included 22 children. So earlier the aircraft arrived in London earlier in the morning on a previous flight, and crew had actually reported a frozen door seal and abnormal noises sort of coming from the right aft of the service door. So from this, a full inspection was put in place for the door, and it was carried out by the ground engineer, who then performed a pressurisation leak check. And in order to carry out this check without requiring the aircraft's engines, the pressurisation system was set to manual. However, after he did the check, he did fail to reset it back to auto after the investigation was completed. So from this, the flight crew sort of ignored the pressurisation system state on three occasions during the pre-flight procedure, the also after start check and the after takeoff check. And during these checks, no one actually on the flight deck noticed the incorrect setting, that it was on manual and not auto. So the aircraft took off for Athens at 9:07 a.m. and this was with the pressurisation system set to manual, not auto. And this meant that the aft outflow valve was partially opened. So the aircraft started to climb, and with all this happening, you could guess that the pressure inside the cabin sort of gradually increased. And from this, in the cockpit, the cabin altitude warning horn sounded. So this warning should have prompted crews to stop climbing, as they would have been losing oxygen. However, crew ignored this sign, as they thought it was a takeoff configuration warning, and this signals that the aircraft is not ready for takeoff. So these two signals have different warning lights, but also have the same warning sound. So they totally ignored it because they thought, oh yeah, we've taken off, there's just a mistake. It's that warning light that says, oh, we shouldn't be taken off, but we've taken off, if you get what I mean. So they just ignored it because they thought, oh no, it's just that warning sign. So from this, because they ignored this warning, the passenger oxygen light illuminated at an altitude of approximately 18,000 feet. And this meant that the oxygen masks in the passenger cabin were automatically deployed. So 3 minutes after takeoff, the captain contacted officials at Larnaca Airport, where they've just took off from, to sort of report a fault. I was going to say flight. To report a fault with the aircraft's pulling control. And as this was sort of a minor incident and they could carry on, ATC gave them the clearance to climb to 34,000 feet. And from this, the pilot spoke to the ground engineer and repeatedly stated that the cooling ventilation fan lights were off. So the engineer, who actually was the one that conducted the pressurisation leak check, actually asked the captain, can you confirm the pressurisation panel is set to auto? However, from this, I think the engineer knew his mistake and what he's done. The captain was already experienced from the low lack of oxygen an onset of hypoxia and started getting the symptoms. So he's disregarded the question and instead asked in reply, where are my equipment cooling circuit breakers? And this was actually the last communication with the aircrafts. And yeah, the last communication that anyone from ATC actually had with the aircraft after this point. So between 9:30 and 9:40, Nicosia ATC, which was also in Cyprus, actually kept attempting to contact the aircraft without success. And by 9:37, the aircraft passed from Cyprus ATC over to Greek ATC, which was in Athens. And this was without making any contact, so no one had any contact from this flight over to Athens. As if you go into another airspace, you have to make contact. So the ATC in Athens were quite sceptical about this, and 19 attempts were made to contact the aircraft between 10:12 a.m. and 10:50, and all of these attempts were just met with nothing. They were basically ignored, no response. And at 10:40, the aircraft then entered the holding pattern for Athens Airport, and they were still at a flight level of 34,000 feet. And it actually remained in this holding pattern under control of autopilot, which was already switched on. And this was for the next 70 minutes. Just imagine that. So the aircraft was circling around Athens due to the autopilot being put on. And of course, with all this happening, this just sparks the worst fears of a terrorist attack similar to 9/11. As they didn't have any communication from the cockpit. So the Ministry of Defence within Greece actually contacted the officials of the fighter jets, explaining that they were struggling to communicate with the plane and could they go up and see what was going on. So two F-16 fighter aircraft from the Hellenic Air Force combat wing were actually scrambled from the Nea Ankialos, I think I said that right, airbase to establish visual contact. So they intercepted the passenger jet, so they got up close to it at about 11:24. And what they first observed was actually quite shocking. So they saw that the first officer of the flight was slumped motionless at the controls and the captain's seat was empty. They also had a quick look within the passenger cabin, and most of the passengers were wearing oxygen masks, with some actually dangling down from the cabin as well, not being worn. So at 11:49, flight attendant Andreas Promedo actually was seen entering the cockpit and sat down in the captain's seat, having remained conscious by using a portable oxygen supply. So these portable oxygen supplies given to crew actually last longer than the ones within the passenger cabins. So also his girlfriend Harris Sharalambus was also seen in the cockpit helping Prodromal. I'm saying all these names wrong, I really do apologise. And they were trying to control the aircraft, and they actually saw the F-16 aircraft and waved briefly, but almost as soon as they entered the cockpit, the left engine flame actually just blew out due to fuel exhaustion. So from this left engine just being taken out, the plane started veering to the left of the holding pattern and started to ascend. And 10 minutes after the loss of power from the left engine, sadly the right engine also started to flame out. And just before 12:04, the aircraft crashed into the hills of Gramatiko, which is quite near Athens, so 40 kilometres from Athens. And this sadly killed all 121 passengers and crew on board. So crash investigations started as soon as the crash sort of happened on the day. And I watched a documentary on this the other day, and it was so sad to see all the family within the airports asking where their relatives are. They heard about the crash, and yeah, I just hate to be in that situation. But from the investigations, it concluded that Prodromal's experience was insufficient, as he did actually have some flying lessons and had a few hours up in the air, but unfortunately the experience of him flying was insufficient, and he would be unable to take control of the aircraft in such circumstances. However, he did succeed in banking the plane away from Athens and towards a rural area as the engine sort of went out. So he did very well. So not everyone can fly a plane, but he actually controlled the plane so that it wouldn't land anywhere within Athens, causing more deaths, and it actually just went into a mountain. So many of the bodies recovered were sadly burnt beyond recognition. So they weren't being recognised due to the fire after the crash. And autopsies on the crash showed that victims were actually alive at the time of impact, but it could not be determined whether they were conscious whilst the plane was crashing or not. And then the flight date recorder and the cockpit voice recorder were sent to Paris for analysis, and the CVR recording enabled investigators to identify Prodromal as the flight attendant who entered the cockpit in order to try and save the plane. And it was said that he called Mayday 5 times, but because the radio he was unaware was still tuned into Larnaca's ATC within Cyprus, he was actually not heard by any of the ATC within Athens or Cyprus. So from this, the Hellenic Air Accident Investigation and Aviation Safety Board actually listed a direct causal chain of events that sort of made the accident happen. So this was from the non-recognition of pilots, that the pressurisation system was set to manual, also the non-identification by the crew of the true nature of the problem, the incapacitation of the crew due to hypoxia, and this is due to lack of oxygen. If anyone don't know, lack of oxygen, you basically go unconscious, and also eventual fuel starvation, and finally the impact to the ground. So they wanted someone to blame for the crash, so I understand that the families of the passengers that did sadly die wanted someone to be blamed for the accident. So they actually filed a lawsuit against Boeing on the 24th of July 2007, and their lawyer actually said that Boeing put the same alarm in place for two different types of dysfunctions. One was a minor fault, but the others, the loss of oxygen, was really a major fault and really important. And the family sued Boeing for €76 million in compensation from Boeing, and the case was settled out of court. So Boeing did, I'm guessing, did give the family some compensation. And then in early 2008, an Athens prosecutor charged 6 former employees with manslaughter over this incident, and reports at the time said the suspects were 2 Britons, 1 Bulgarian national and 3 Cyprus nationalities. And also on the 23rd of December 2008, Helios Airways and 4 of its officials were charged within Cyprus with 119 counts of manslaughter and of causing death by recklessness and negligence. So the 4 of the officials were the former chief pilot, Lankos, I apologise for these name pronunciations, Lankos Storminov, chairman of the board Andreas Drakos, chief executive officer Dimitris Pantazis, and operations manager Georgios Kikidis. So from this trial, this began in November 2009, and the state of the prosecutors finished presenting their case within 2011. So it was quite a long court case. And in December of 2011, this case was dismissed and the defendants were acquitted. However, this wasn't the end. From all these court cases, they were still going on. And in December 2011, shortly after the end of their case in Cyprus, a new trial began within the Greek magistrate court. And this was in which Dimitris Pantazis, the chief executive officer, Georgios Kikidis, I think I said that right, the flight operations manager, and former chief pilot Lenko Stouts. I say it first and then I go to say it the second time and I say it completely different to how I said it the first time. Stuminov, and also chief engineer Alan Irwin, who was quite a new one within the case, were all charged with manslaughter. So all except Irwin had been previously charged and acquitted, like we said, by the Cyprus authorities. And in April 2012, all were actually found guilty and sentenced to 10 years imprisonment and remained free on bail pending the appeal. So from this, in 2013, Irwin was actually quite successful with his appeal, but all the other defendants did lose their appeal and were sentenced to 10 years and was ordered to stand. But it's quite weird because defendants were actually given the option to buy out their sentence for €79,000 each. So Stoyanov was spared time in jail after the intervention of the Bulgarian government, as they sort of felt like they were innocent for the charges. But in the end, Greek investigations blamed the crash of Helios Airways outside of Athens, and they said this was definitely human error after the aircraft failed to pressurise after taking off from Larnaca. And prosecutors within both Cyprus and Greece blamed airline officials for cutting corners on safety operations, and they argued that they failed to act on advice that the pilots did not meet the necessary aviation standards. So that's basically a summary of what happened and what happened after the crash. It's crazy to think you've just, when working in the aviation industry, you've just got to be on the ball all the time, working, if you're working on engineering and everything, because just one little mistake, one false move, and you could, it could just lead to loads of deaths, as they've seen, and it could also lead to you being imprisoned. It's just crazy to think, isn't it? But it's really sad to think that just that one action cost 121 lives on board. But it's real great that I can't say his surname, I'm really sorry. The cabin crew actually went in and veered the plane away from the Athens, the populated area, and went into a mountain. So he saved quite a lot of people's lives doing that, but unfortunately those on board weren't able to live. But it was not going to say that it was better that they were unconscious. It was unaware whether they were conscious or unconscious at the time. But it's really sad to see a crash like this happen, and hopefully, like we said, Helios Airways didn't really survive from this crash. People were warned to stay away from Helios Airways after this crash did happen, and it did sadly cease a year later. So it's really sad to see that an accident like this did happen, but also makes you think, and I hope they did improve on the safety features, making sure that checklists were done, everything was ticked off, nothing was missed, because you just never know. It's crazy to think one little mistake and it could cost so many lives. Yeah, it just makes you think, doesn't it? So that concludes the topic of discussion and also concludes the episode for this week. So next week, I was unsure what to do. I've been having a think all last night about it. I think we're going to do a discussion about airports within Berlin, because I've been to Berlin before. Back in 2017, I went with my friends and we flew into Berlin-Schönefeld. I need to research on this more. I know one of them's shut now, either Berlin-Tegel or Schönefeld, but I think it's Tegel, and a new Berlin airport. So I'm going to be talking about Schönefeld and Tegel, and also the new airport that's opened up. So that'll be quite interesting. And I know it's quite going to Germany, even though we just beat them in the football. I hope you're watching the football, actually. It's actually really, last night's game, so England was against Germany last night, really thought we was going to be kicked out, because Germany was like one of the big teams, along with France and Portugal and the Netherlands as well, and they've all been kicked out. It's crazy. So we're up against Ukraine on Saturday, so looking forward to watching that. So we'll see what happens. Maybe England could win the Euros. I'm not getting my hopes up for it, but you never know. But anyways, we'll end the podcast there. So to end the podcast, so next week we're on to Berlin's airports. Next week I'll give you all the latest news as well. So to end this podcast, I'm Ebony. This is Up in the Sky. And I hope you all have a great week.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Up in the Sky. New episodes will be posted every Wednesday. Follow at Up in the Sky Aviation Podcast on Instagram for information and updates. Hope you all have a great week.